Welcome to On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now, your host, Jared Serbu.
Thanks for listening this week. I'm Jared Serbu. On the program this time, we get the latest on the Army's network integration evaluation. That method for testing and integrating new technology into the Army's inventory is several years old now, but it's undergoing significant changes. The NIE that just wrapped up in the desert southwest in and around Fort Bliss served as a proof of concept for a new construct the Army's calling the Army Warfighting Assessment. Starting next year, the Army will transition from a twice-a-year event with the NIE to once a year. One of those NIEs will be replaced with an Army Warfighting Assessment, a structure the Army thinks will be more flexible and let industry offer prototypes for on-the-ground testing by soldiers. We have two guests this week to talk about the NIE. Later in the hour, Gary Martin, the Program Executive Officer for Command, Control, and Communications Tactical. We begin, though, with Brigadier General Terrence McKenrick, the commander of the Army Brigade Modernization Command. He spoke with me by phone from Fort Bliss to give us an overview of how the Army's using the NIE and the changes that are underway.
In the spring, every year we run a network integration evaluation exercise. And in the fall, this particular exercise is a transition for us. So we're transitioning from a network integration evaluation to what we'll run every fall from here on out, an Army Warfighting Assessment. And as you indicated, there is a difference between the two. Our network integration evaluations, we've run 9 of them previously, so this is number 10, and they've all been focused on our mission command network, improving the system through a series of evaluations, a very rigorous test and evaluation process that we run in partnership with the Army's Test and Evaluation Command. So for those mission command systems, they've go through a series of NIEs and improvements before the systems are fielded to the force. And the key word in that NIE is the integration. So we're able to take a system. The Army's very good, and our industry partners very good about producing a system that meets requirements. And what this process allows in a network integration evaluation is to be able to put that system into an environment replicating combat conditions, force-on-force exercise, and put it through the paces and see how well it performs integrated into the rest of all the other systems. And so for each of our concepts and capabilities, we're able to see how they interoperate together with each other and how we can improve, and that allows us to improve everything overall. So our Army warfighting assessments are different in that they don't have the same stringent test and evaluation requirements that our NIE, the Network Integration Evaluation, has in the spring. So over a period of time, we decided we needed a different environment, still that same rigorous, tough training force-on-force exercise that replicates combat conditions, but an environment that our industry partners could bring in prototypes, ideas that they were testing out, that they wanted to put in an environment where they had a little more freedom to assess it and not have to meet strict requirements. They can make refinements, receive good feedback from soldiers. That's the most critical piece of either an NIE or an AWA, is putting these systems, these concepts or capabilities in the hands of soldiers and their opportunity to provide good feedback. And that's the innovation part of the process, where they are able to see how it can be better, what refinements we can make, and then our industry partners are able to go out, refine the equipment, expedite that requirements development and acquisition process, and then bring that piece of equipment from an AWA, make changes, and bring it into an NIE for test and evaluation. So together, those two exercises allow us to continue to make improvements to our mission command network, to other concepts and capabilities in the process. The most important part about our AWA, we focus on three areas with our AWA. The first is our future force development. That's where we look at the new concepts and capabilities that some of them are organizational design, some of them are systems that are provide solutions to what we call our Army warfighting challenges. And those are 20 enduring problems, areas that we want to focus on to improve our future fighting force. A couple examples of those Army warfighting challenges are ensuring interoperability and our ability to operate in a joint interorganizational and multinational environment. Another Army warfighting challenge is how do we develop agile and adaptive leaders? So we have 20 of those, and we try to focus on improving those capability gaps that are identified in that process. And the AWA, when we talk about future force development, focuses on new concepts and capabilities that fill some of those capability gaps, or solutions to those enduring problems. So another, our second key focus area for our AWAs is training and readiness. So all the units that participate in this particular exercise, NIE 16-1, an Army Warfighting Assessment, this exercise has over 9,000 participants, service members participating in the exercise, with over 3,000 civilians providing support for all those new innovative systems that we're evaluating and assessing during this process. So very comprehensive exercise, but all the units that are participating, that all those service members are in, all gain, because they're in this very high-end exercise, with a lot of resources, able to exercise 2 weeks of rigorous force-on-force training out in the field, that they gain a great readiness benefit out of this that increases their ability to deploy on a moment's notice for their wartime combat mission. And our third area that we focus on for AWAs is our interoperability. When we have joint and multinational partners, as we have 13 countries participating in this exercise, over a total of 1,100 different service members from those 13 different countries, then we gain an ability to assess our interoperability. We have a coalition network that we've set up for the exercise, and so we're able to assess our ability to communicate with our other partners, and the division and the units participating are able to assess their ability to command the mission command capability with all those joint and multinational partners. So it really is three separate areas that we benefit: the future force development, the training readiness, and the interoperability in this Army warfighting assessment.
So that's a great summary. It sounds like, bottom line, the AWA is going to be a lot less focused on materiel potentially than an NIE would be, excuse me. And as you said, much more focused on how the Army is organized and more of a training exercise than the NIE ever was.
That's a great way to summarize what the difference between those two is. The NIE testing and evaluation, very focused, it's the final validation process for our systems that before we go into mass production and fielding to our forces. So any refinements we can make through this iterative NIE AWA process allows us to make sure we are saving money and cost avoidance on putting something out there in the soldiers in the field that isn't working properly or not effective. The AWA is more expansive. We're able to look at some of our operational and organizational concepts, like our joint force entry operations or air-to-ground reconnaissance and security, or joint fires and intel surveillance and reconnaissance. So it is much more expansive when we look at all those systems and capabilities, not just tied to what traditionally has been a focus for the NIEs on our mission command network.
And this being the first Army warfighting assessment, as I understand it, the Army's calling this one a proof of concept. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what exactly you're trying to prove with the first AWA and sort of the questions that you're going into it with.
To ensure that we were prepared to make this transition from two NIEs a year to an NIE and an AWA, we've gone through a process of slowly transitioning over one of these exercises to an Army warfighting assessment. So in the last NIE, NIE 15-2 last spring, we called that the initial operating concept for our Army warfighting assessment. So we're able to start to expand into some of those other capabilities, as I described, not just focused on systems and hardware and software, being able to look at how we fight. and some of our operational and organizational concepts. And now this is our final proof of concept, so it's a larger exercise. It's the largest exercise we've ever conducted. It's the first time we've established a coalition network for the exercise. And so we've slowly ramped it up to an exercise that really gets after that, not only the future force development that you have in the NIEs, but more training and readiness and more interoperability that we can assess as part of the Army Warfighting Assessment. So it's been a progressive process, and next year we'll have just the one NIE and an AWA in the fall.
And so now that that's going to be the case, that you're going to have an AWA as a precursor to an NIE every single year, does the NIE itself change, or will that process look pretty similar to, for example, what it did last year?
It will look very similar. We don't intend to change that part of the process. It's still, we have three partners that work those NIEs and also help us with the AWA Future Force Development, and that's our Army Test and Evaluation Command, and also our System of Systems Engineering and Integration Command. Those two, ATEC and SOCE, are partners with us to make sure that the systems, most of those concepts that we're assessing for an NIE, that they're loaded properly on all the vehicle platforms. The mission command networks are all connected, communicating correctly, and then Army Test and Evaluation Command runs that validation process to ensure the stringent requirements for each piece of equipment, each system, that they're met prior to mass development, mass production, and fielding to the force. So we expect that process to stay about the same. The benefit is that all the systems that go into the NIE are mature systems that have gone through a development process. The AWA, because we're able to take more prototype systems there, the systems that go through an AWA and then into the NIE process should be much better postured to make it through those tests and validations and those requirements process for fielding. So ultimately, it should streamline and allow for an expedited acquisition and development process.
Brigadier General Terrence McKenrick is the commander of the Army Brigade Modernization Command. We'll come back and talk more about the Army's network integration evaluation and the transition to Army warfighting assessments after a short break. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbin. Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, this is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. Let's get back to our conversation with Brigadier General Terrence McKenrick, the commander of the Army's Brigade Modernization Command. We're talking about the Army's network integration evaluations and the transition to a new construct it's calling Army Warfighting Assessments.
You said earlier, I think, that industry is going to have a little bit more flexibility to modify their systems in the field. I'm not sure if that's exactly the way you put it, but I think I've got that roughly right. Expand on that a little bit, if you could. If you're a vendor who's been through the NIE process in the past, how is this AWA experience going to be similar or different?
We think this will allow us to really continue to strengthen the good relationships we already have with our industry partners, because this gives them an opportunity coming into an AWA to have more freedom and flexibility about how they want to assess these new concepts and capabilities that they're introducing. So they will be able to go through, get great feedback from soldiers, from the units out in the field, as to how they can improve these systems so that they can better meet the requirements that that soldiers are going to need and that the Army will need at the end state for a different system. So it is what we see as something that industry has asked for, and that our other coalition partners and joint service partners, everyone sees the value added to an additional exercise focused more on ideas, turning ideas into capabilities. And this allows a lot more of the experimentation that we couldn't necessarily do under the NIE because of the strict testing and evaluation criteria.
So one thing, obviously, that the AWA and the NIE have in common is that they're both happening at Fort Bliss/White Sands. What obviously the Army decided that was a good venue for the NIEs for many, many years. What specific advantages do you get out of that particular location? Why is this a good place to do this?
It is one of the ideal training areas in the Army because of the co-location of Fort Bliss, White Sands Missile Range, and Holloman Air Force Base. So you have joint partners who are able to work together and put together a large exercise. Now, the first and ideal area to focus is on the huge training area. Between the southern part of Fort Bliss all the way to the northern part of White Sands is over 180 miles of distance, and then it's over 40 miles east to west wide. So from a maneuver standpoint, we've got the 1st Armored Division here, the maneuver forces that we use for the exercise. There is plenty of terrain and varying terrain, from some hilly mountainous terrain to some forested areas. And you were really able to exercise the systems, not just from the standpoint of a large amount of forces and units and soldiers, but being able to put distance out there and be able to determine our mission command system's capability to communicate over long distances, which is going to be critical for our expeditionary forces as we send them overseas to different countries. They have to be able to communicate and operate over long distances. So you've got a huge training area. The facilities at Fort Bliss, when we talk about the training facilities, the ranges that the units are able to use that train here, are some of the state-of-the-art facilities for the military. We have a combined arms collective training facility to train for urban operations and city fighting. We have the Army's only digital air-to-ground integration range, so some great capabilities that you just can't find at other posts around the Army. And we also have several forward base camps throughout such a large training area, similar to our forward operating bases that we've used in the deployments in the last decade. We can set up base camps forward throughout the training area for units to operate out of. There are landing strips in Fort Bliss and at White Sands Missile Range, and drop zones at both locations for so if we have aircraft that need to posture in the training areas, and unmanned aerial systems that we need to launch, and then for any airborne operations for soldiers coming in, parachute drops, they're able to do those into the drop zones that we have in both training areas. So just a lot of capability at Fort Bliss. And then when you look at White Sands Missile Range, they have some unique real-world testing facilities. They have some subterranean caves we're able to use for training and testing facilities. They also have one of the only, it's the only Department of Defense area that we control the airspace. So we're able to, that gives us some unique capabilities that we can't do in other areas that where you have just civilian aircraft through your airspace. And because of the remote location, such a large training area, and having areas away from population areas, we're able to do some electronic warfare testing that you don't want to do near populations, and that allows us to, with minimum spectrum interference, test some of our jamming capabilities that are critical to our combat operations. So it's unique facilities out at White Sands that we're able to take advantage of. And then finally, Holloman Air Force Base is co-located in this area, and it's they have two F-16 fighter squadrons that are able to provide close air support for the units in training in the exercise, and then they also have the MQ-1, MQ-9 Predator and Reaper unmanned aerial systems that are able to use as reconnaissance and surveillance assets for the integrated into our units that are in the exercise also. So some great capabilities. When you bring the three of those together, it really is a unique training environment and one of the best training environments for our military. And during this upcoming AWA, we're bringing in a team that will conduct an assessment to determine if we can receive accreditation as a joint multinational training capability. And that accreditation certification would allow more joint other service units and multinational partners. It basically validates that we've met certain requirements for joint and multinational training environment, and would encourage more of our other countries and other service partners to come to Fort Bliss and White Sands and be able to participate in future AWA exercises. So we're very excited about showcasing the capability that these three areas promote with this AWA exercise.
So would that certification mean that joint and multinational exercises would happen at Bliss or could happen at Bliss more often, or that just the international and joint contingent in AWAs could be larger when they do happen?
Well, it certainly would validate it for our future AWAs and encourage more participation by our joint multinational partners. But it would showcase the capabilities that we have at this area. And so other services and other countries could look at Fort Bliss and White Sands as potential areas to come in and do additional training with the 1st Armored Division or to set up their own training events in this unique training environment.
Let's stick with the joint piece if we can. I know we said joint and multinational, but just to start with the joint component of this, I know there's been talk about trying to get the Marine Corps and other of your sister services involved in the NIE process for years. But as you go into the first AWA, how large a joint contingent are you expecting, or is this still primarily an Army exercise?
It is mostly an Army exercise. The units participating, as I described before with Holloman Air Force Base, we're able to integrate some joint assets from our Air Force partners, and both in aircraft and with the unmanned aerial systems that they're able to provide. We have been and are working now to, we're already in the planning and coordination for phases for AWA 17 for next year. And have just gone through a review process looking at the concepts and capabilities. This particular exercise is focused on the NATO, our NATO partners in the European theater. Next year's exercise, AWA 17, will focus on the Pacific theater with our PACOM partners and multinational partners in the Pacific. And so we're looking to increase the Marine to try to get a Marine air-to-ground task force as part of next year's exercise, and are working that. We'll have a conference next month, a resourcing conference at which we'll be able to dedicate which headquarters and division units will participate in next year's exercise. And in addition to the Marine task force, we already have UK, Canada, and Australia partners committed to next year's exercise, and obviously working to have more Pacific partner participation in the exercise. So it is a long-term effort. We've been the exercise we're executing now, we've been planning and coordinating for 16 months, so we're already well into the planning process for next year's exercise, but our joint participation is going to be critical to being able to assess our interoperability, not just with our other service partners, but with our multinational partners. They want to be able to see how well they can communicate with Marine forces and our Air Force. We train today so we can fight in future environments with our joint and multi-service partners.
And for this year's sort of UCOM centric focus, what specific countries are you expecting to participate?
When we talk about our NATO partners that are participating, they are we have 13 partners, and those include Australia, Belgium, Germany, Denmark, Finland, France, and Great Britain, and Italy, and the Netherlands, Norway, Poland, and Sweden. So you can see we also have Canadian participation in this as one of our NATO partners. And it is so we have over 1,100 of those service members from those countries participating. We also have, they provided some aircraft. Our coalition partners are providing additional aircraft that participate in the exercise, and some of their own coalition unmanned aerial systems that will participate in the exercise also. And they're so in addition to having this coalition network, this is the first time we've set up a network that is able to, from our previous NIEs, it was just a U.S. network. This is the first time we're connected to our joint multinational partners and able to communicate effectively across all those countries throughout the exercise, which gives us a better assessment of our interoperability when we look at our coalition intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, our ability to do joint fire support and to integrate air and missile defense along that coalition network.
Brigadier General Terrence McKenrick is the commander of the Army Brigade Modernization Command. He'll join us for one more segment on the Army's plans for a new series of Army warfighting assessments and at around Fort Bliss, Texas, after another quick break. This is On DoD on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbin. Thanks for listening to FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. Brigadier General Terrence McKenrick joins us for one more segment. He's the commander of the Army Brigade Modernization Command at Fort Bliss, Texas. We're talking this week about the Army's network integration evaluations, formerly twice a year, soon to be once a year. One of those, as we've been discussing, will be replaced by an annual Army Warfighting Assessment, or AWA.
As you said from the outset, the AWA is not just about capabilities, it's about concepts too, but maybe we can talk a little bit about some of the specific capabilities that you're going to look at during the AWA. We probably don't have time to get through all of them, but maybe if you can take us through some of the most interesting, the most promising, what's on top of the list for you to the extent that you can put things on top of a list.
Sure. When we talk about those concepts and capabilities for our AWA, I kind of break them down by those three main areas that are focus areas for AWA: the future force development, training readiness, and interoperability. When we look at our future force development systems, and we've established this coalition network, some of the key areas that we look at are expeditionary command posts. So our ability to set up on short notice, be able to send a command post into a overseas, into an austere environment that is somewhat self-sustaining, that is tailorable. So initially it goes in and is able to set up operations very quickly without a lot of support from anyone else, and then be able to grow over a period of time based on more forces arriving in theater to support the operation. So really looking at the capabilities we need, and what we're exercising is a home station mission command center capability, and we'll exercise this during this AWA, is being able to have a small command post forward and receive much of their support when we talk about planning and operations and reach back to their through this expeditionary command post, reach back to their home unit. Now, so the 1st Armored Division will have a reach back capability to a home station mission command center that they can then look for additional resources from personnel to be able to do the planning and operations, and then send that information, those products, forward to that forward deployed command post, the expeditionary command post. So maintaining that supportive relationship between the forward deployed unit and their home station command center. And that's a capability we'll assess and continue to improve based on feedback from this AWA. We're also looking at operational energy capabilities. So if we set up a forward base camp, and again, in one of these austere environments as part of a short notice deployment, being able to bring in some capabilities that will help provide some self-sustainment for our forces. So some examples of those in a forward base camp that we'll assess during this exercise will be our energy efficient smart shelter system. So it's a shelter system that soldiers can stay in. It has LED lighting, solar panels on the roof of the shelter that are able to, and then battery storage, so they're able to build some energy that can be stored in the batteries, and that electric energy can then be used to sustain the shelter, the environmental control measures for that shelter. And it has head-exchanging air ventilators and radiant ceiling heat panels. So a lot of state-of-the-art technology to be able to operate those shelter systems without any outside electricity. So not having to tap in any local support network for electricity to be self-sustaining for those forces on the ground. Another capability that we're looking at for operational energy is and bringing into that same kind of base camp an advanced medium mobile power source microgrid. So it has 60 kilowatt generators that are mounted on this this microgrid, and the it has a capability to monitor the usage throughout the base camp of the power, and then be able to basically turn on generators and turn off generators based on demand. So it's a smart system that really optimizes the amount of energy that's used, and then is able to store the electrical energy based on if it's produced and not needed, it can then store it and then turn off, so you're not using extra gas as part of that system. So it's a smart energy tool for us. Another area that's part of that same base camp concept is a water from air trailer that would go out, and it uses a solid desiccant, and it produces, it takes the humidity that's in the air and is able to absorb, and using the desiccant technology for absorption and desorption, able to pull water out of the air and create a water supply up to 500 gallons per day. And of course, that depends upon the environment that you're in a drier desert area, you're not going to get as much, but that will help produce water that the soldiers can use, drinking water, to help sustain the force without having, if they're not able to rely on a local water source. And then just one final area I'll talk to you about on the operational energy area, we have a black water treatment facility as part of that same sort of a base camp, able to take the black water that's produced by the soldiers in that environment and be able to turn it into gray water. So basically take out some of the decontaminants, go through a water treatment process, and then be able to continue to use that, reuse that water for showers. You wouldn't use it for drinking purposes, but could be used for showers or laundry purposes. So that will help save on some of the water hauling capability you'd need, or how to dispose of black water in that environment, so reusing the water that we have. And those are some of the technologies that we talk about from future force development that we're able to assess in this environment. And when we talk about training readiness for, you know, our second main focus area for an AWA, we're looking more at operational and organizational concepts. So during this exercise, we'll execute a joint forcible entry operation. So we'll have a brigade headquarters from the 82nd Airborne Division out of Fort Bragg, North Carolina, with a airborne battalion. We'll fly from in a package of seven C-17s and seven C-130s, fly from Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and conduct an airborne operation to seize an airfield in the northern part of White Sands Missile Range. And as part of that operation, we'll assess the en route communications capability. Being able to have changing conditions on the ground on the drop zone where they're about to jump into, and be able to pass that information to the unit that's in flight and test and assess their ability to change their plan of how they're going to conduct that airborne assault based on that new information, that they're that kind of up-to-date information as they're en route. And so that'll give us a capability assessment for those airborne operations as part of the joint forcible entry operations. We'll also be able to assess some other organizational and operational concepts for training and readiness, including air-to-ground reconnaissance and security, sustainment operations, or integration of joint fires and intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. We'll also do weapons of mass destruction and exploitation as part of that, as another operational concept we'll be able to look at. So we'll get good feedback from soldiers and from units as to how we can improve our operational concepts for each of those organizational concepts. Now, the third focus area for our AWA was interoperability. And for this exercise, we have those 13 partner nations that are participating in an exercise, Bold Quest, which is integrated into the overall AWA exercise. And it is run by the Joint Staff, and it's the Joint Staff J6 Communications does this exercise as to assess the communication capability with each of our multinational partners in the exercise. And again, establishing that coalition network and being able to assess our ability to do operations, multinational operations, and communicate over that coalition network for command and control of those operations is going to be a critical assessment for this process. So each of those areas, future force development, training readiness, and interoperability, we will assess a total of 78 concepts and capabilities, some of those which I've just described to you today. And the feedback from those will all go into a process for the Army where we'll look at we'll go through a governance forum of steering committees, which will look at the recommendations out of these exercises from our assessment teams, from the soldiers and the units on areas that we want to improve. And then we'll look at what we call the acronym DOTMIL-PF. It's what changes do we need to make to our doctrine, our organization, our training, our materiel, our leadership, our personnel, our facilities, what are all those areas that we can improve, and then we'll make decisions at the Department of the Army level about where we'll dedicate resources that will then allow these systems to go back into the force development process, the acquisition process for improvements, and some of these systems will come back in a future NIE for test and evaluation before mass production and fielding to the force.
Brigadier General Terrence McHenrick is the commander of the Army Brigade Modernization Command. General, thanks for taking some time with us to talk about the NIE and the AWA.
I appreciate your interest in covering the exercise. Thank you.
We'll take one more break here, and when we come back, we'll hear from Gary Martin, the Army Program Executive Officer for Command, Control, Communications, Tactical, and get his perspective on the NIE that just wrapped up. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbian. Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. Thanks for joining us. A few minutes left as we wrap up this week's show on the Army's Network Integration Evaluation and the forthcoming Army Warfighting Assessments, a new construct the Army just proved out at Fort Bliss. We'll round out the hour with Gary Martin. He is the Program Executive Officer for Command, Control, and Communications, Tactical. PEOC3T, of course, is one of the major players in any NIE. Martin talked with me at the annual Association of the U.S. Army Conference here in Washington about his takeaways from the latest event.
Well, 16.1 was the Army's first change in the NIE structure. So this was actually an advanced warfighter experiment run by TRADOC. And so most of this was discover learning, getting user feedback on concepts and technologies, much more so than an official operational test of a program of record.
Mm-hmm.
So this was really about where users want the networks and capability from the networks to go in the future. In our case, we tend to always be at an NIE because our systems are the network. So WINTI, Inc. 1, Inc. 2, our tactical radio programs were all participants in that network. The big takeaway for this NIE was a significant contribution from a coalition interoperability perspective.
Shifting that focus to the Army warfighting assessment piece of things and away from the NIE at least once a year, as a materiel developer, how does that impact you and how are you different? How is the focus different from you other than just, as you said, providing the network for the rest of the formations that are using it?
Well, our interest in that construct is really getting user feedback on what capability developments they want to see the network migrate to. The requirements process is pretty rigid in the acquisition world. A requirements document is set, we build to it, and then it's, until the new requirement is written, we continue to build to the same requirement that we've been levying. These constructs give us some ideas of where new emerging technologies may be value added and how to shape our future programs. In this case, what we've done is we've added a number of enhancements to our systems for early evaluation. We had, for example, improvements to the WINTI system, the user interoperability part of the WINTI system, making it easier for soldiers to load and configure the WINTI systems, which is not a new system per se, but it's an enhancement to a system that we're fielding already.
So that's an enhancement to increment one, I assume?
Increment two.
So, and you actually deployed that and put that in soldiers' hands?
We put it in soldiers' hands, got their initial feedback on the ability to execute those new features within the WINTI systems.
I'm sure the formal feedback is still being written up and finalized, but can you give us a flavor for what they told you?
Well, we got what we expected out of it, that the soldiers would significantly appreciate reducing the time to initialize and configure the systems by, you know, from days to hours. And so from that perspective, it was extremely successful. And it's all software-based, so we can roll that right into production almost immediately.
So those software-based reconfigurations, I assume, can happen at a distance, that, you know, the reconfigurations can be ordered, for example, at home station and a unit downrange in Iraq, Afghanistan, wherever can benefit from that?
Well, they would be implemented in the field or wherever the assets tend to be, but it would eliminate having to physically touch manually every one of the systems. As long as you can get into one of the systems, you can then over the air provide the reconfiguration for the systems.
Hmm. What did this AWA process, I mean, this was a proof of concept, as I understand it. What did it teach you about how you want to design future events like this a year from now?
Well, I think it the big takeaway was the less strict nature of an NIE that we've been experiencing in the past, where usually there are a couple systems under formal testing. It really limits what you can bring into the contribution, because you're trying to at least keep the environment somewhat sterile for the system that's under test, so you're not adding a bunch of white noise into the process. In this case, I think it showed the value of having soldiers exercise equipment and provide different feedback on changes to operating constructs, how new technologies might be employed in military utilities. So you're not really looking at a production-ready system per se, but does a particular technology early in the process convey a capability that the Army will want to pursue? So it's going to help write requirements in the future.
And how does that impact industry? What's their participation like in an Army warfighting assessment versus an NIE with that more flexible structure?
Well, the current NIEs, which generally have one or a handful of systems under test, limits industry participation in the sense that someone who has new emerging technologies may not have an opportunity to simply bring it to the experiment. In this case, there's a pretty broad array of emerging technologies that industry can bring in and get a first assessment of the technology itself, whether users want it, where some of the enhancements may be needed in order to get user acceptability of the capability. So many of these were very prototype in nature. They're not really production-ready systems, but we learned a lot about capabilities that soldiers would find useful and effective in combat.
Did you have that broad industry participation this time around, or is this planned for the future?
There was a fairly significant participation this time around, and I think it'll grow in the future.
Let's shift gears a little bit to some of the projects you've been working on. Future Network, your predecessor talked to us about quite a bit at this time last year here at AUSA. I think the first element of three in the roadmap is supposed to kind of be finished by fiscal year 2016. Can you bring us up to date on Network 2.0?
Yeah, the Future Network in many cases is an expansion of the tactical radio network, which is really battalion and below.
Mm-hmm.
So today we have three products that we are in the midst of buying, testing, and fielding. The Manpack radio, the Rifleman radio, which is a soldier-borne radio to connect dismounted soldiers into the network, and then a maneuver of a vehicle-mounted radio. And the handheld radio, or the Rifleman radio, we actually have a competitive procurement underway. There are two contracts that have built full-rate production versions. They're in testing today. We finished customer test, qualification test. Customer test is just starting now. The Manpack is actually in solicitation. The proposals have just come in. So we're evaluating that for the next couple of months, and then we'll be making one or more awards next spring. And the maneuver radio is in test, so we're going to enter our operational test this coming year for a full-rate production decision. So that will really expand the tactical network down within the battalion and below for data, voice, position, location, which is a capability that doesn't really exist today. So that's part of the mobile network. In terms of the backbone network, which for us is principally WIN-T, we just got our full-rate production this summer for WIN-T Ing 2. WIN-T Ing 3 will really bring an enhanced network operations capability, so the NetOps tools that allows the signal soldiers to actually manage, defend, protect the network. That integration will occur over the course of this coming year, which will add the network management capability for the tactical radios. So that'll be developed, tested over the next year. It's developed. It'll be tested over the next year, then we'll go into full production. And then there are a number of enhancements that are really part of making the entire system more usable by soldiers and easier to operate. So, for example, today all of our passwords are all manually entered. So we've just started an initiative on tactical public key infrastructure, so using a token much like we use in our post-camp and station, where you can actually eliminate the need for passwords and having a token that allows you to enter PIN numbers, which are far more secure and easier to go to single sign-on. Today, a soldier has to sign on multiple different software applications in an operations center. So we're going to simplify what users can do, and we're in the middle of developing and delivering most of that over the next year, year and a half.
Interesting. So for those tokens, are you basically using the exact same tokens that you would at post-campus station, or are you having to build an entirely new PKI infrastructure?
No, we're evaluating a number of tokens. It'll likely be something like what we're using in post-campus station, which is essentially our ID card.
Right.
And the question is, do we deliver something a little bit more robust? Interestingly enough, on the floor here today, there are a couple of companies that are offering wristband tokens that you can actually eliminate the need for an actual card, ruggedized, intended for the environment that soldiers typically operate in, as opposed to home station and post-camp and station. So
the decision
will be made over the next year or two what the token will look like.
I guess that is kind of a nice thing if you're starting from scratch and not reusing the CAT card. You can kind of put it in whatever form factor makes the most sense in a tactical environment.
We can. I wouldn't rule out the CAT card, but we're not committed that it is going to be the token yet.
Gary Martin is the Army Program Executive Officer for Command, Control, Communications, Tactical, talking with us about the latest network integration evaluation in and near Fort Bliss, Texas. Earlier in the hour, we heard from Brigadier General Terrence McKenrick, the commander of the Army Brigade Modernization Command, with an overview of the NIE process and how it's transitioning to Army warfighting assessments. If you missed that conversation, we'll post today's full program at federalnewsradio.com/ondod. That's going to do it for this week's show. Thanks, as always, for joining us. I'm Jared Serbu. So long.
You've been listening to On DoD with Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. On DoD, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.